Today on Annenberg Radio News.
I tried to drink urine. Forget it.
He can laugh about it now, but one local man spent six terrifying days lost in Joshua Tree National Park. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, October 5th, 2010. I'm Madeline Cinto. The Los Angeles Unified School Board is meeting behind closed doors today to decide on a settlement in the teachers' layoff lawsuit. In February, the teachers' union sued LAUSD, claiming that when the district laid off teachers from schools in low-income communities, it was depriving an education for students of color. The district said its policy was to lay off newer teachers, and those new teachers happened to be at schools such as Gompers, Laity, and Markham. Los Angeles Mayor Villaraigosa and the American Civil Liberties Union are scheduled to hold a news conference right after the board's decision. Before the school board went into a closed session, it approved a plan with options to balance the budget. But none of the options are pain-free. LAUSD will continue bleeding jobs. And to make matters worse, enrollment is declining, which means so is federal funding. Marlene Medawar explains.
Megan Riley is chief financial officer for the superintendent's office. She says these federal funds have saved jobs.
One-time funding doesn't solve the problems, especially if we have declining enrollment where our student population is coming down and if we have maybe our expenditures are still increasing. So we have to really address those problems, which are more fundamental systemic issues, rather than relying on every year some new funding to come out of the, you know, Washington, D.C.
Next year, they are trying to save $142 million. The remedy will require furloughs and further salary reductions. But it will save 3,300 jobs. It will also decrease the number of school days.
I think for the 2011-12 school years, there will be job reductions. I don't think that can be avoided. Mm-hmm. We're trying to do is minimize as much as possible the impact on the programs to the students and then to the employees that were, that would potentially be affected.
The superintendent's office has until July 2011 to find the best solutions for the school district. Marilyn Medawar, Annenberg Radio News.
Fewer foreigners are coming to Los Angeles than they were 10 years ago. That's according to a new USC study. Jessica Flores spoke to the study's co-author.
The number of foreign-born people living in LA dropped. According to a new study out of the University of Southern California, the city's immigrant population is just under 1.5 million. That's slightly below the figures from 10 years ago. In 2000, the foreign-born population was 40.9% of the city's population. Now it's 39.4%. According to researchers at USC who conducted the study, the longtime immigrant population is growing while new arrivals are decreasing. Dowell Myers is a professor of urban planning at USC and co-author of the study.
The immigrant arrivals have been diverted to other destinations around the U.S. that have much cheaper housing and better job opportunities. Once our current recession started, it increased the decline even faster because our unemployment rate is higher than other cities.
For the first time in three decades, longtime foreign-born residents outnumber newcomers, and that could be an advantage to new arrivals.
Before, back in 1990 or even 2000, newcomers showed up and they were surrounded by a sea of other newcomers, and now they have old-timers who can help them out.
Myers says the new data also can help inform politics.
Very often, it seems like, listen to the campaign rhetoric, it sounds like people are trying to argue about a California that hasn't existed since 1990. And they're still back in the old days trying to build fences and try to fend off unwanted new arrivals and worry about people who are freeloaders and not paying taxes. And it's all changed in the last 10 or 15 years.
The study uses data from the Census Bureau's American Community Survey and was commissioned by the Pat Brown Institute of Public Affairs at Cal State LA. Jessica Flores, Annenberg Radio News.
Today, Matrice Richardson's father, Michael, asked the LA Board of Supervisors to pursue its own investigation into his daughter's death. Richardson disappeared last September after the sheriff's station in Malibu released her in the middle of the night, without a cell phone, car, or money. Her remains were found 11 months ago in a ravine. Police still don't know what happened to her. Michael Richardson says he just wants his tax dollars to be put to work. For all the great things about the internet, there are also drawbacks, a big one being cyberbullying. Today, I went to a workshop in downtown LA that warned parents about this very problem. The Los Angeles Unified School District joined forces with the Anti-Defamation League to teach Spanish-speaking parents about the internet and how their kids can get bullied on it. But it wasn't much of a surprise to Christine Provincio, a member of the LAUSD Parent Council.
In middle school and high school, it's been happening. If someone doesn't like you, they get their little group and they get on there and somehow they get pictures of you and they say things about the other student, which are very harmful. And then parents are saying, well, my child doesn't want to go to school anymore. And my child has expressed to me that there are people after them.
Before it gets to this point, Provincio wants parents to monitor what their kids do online, especially as more kids from elementary school to college either take part in or experience the effects of cyberbullying. This style of bullying in the internet age can be intimidating to parents who don't have access to computers or the internet, but Anti-Defamation League director Eva Vega says parents only need to be interested.
Just because they may not understand everything about a computer or the internet, they may not really understand all the ins and outs of Facebook, that they still very much so have the skill set to help their kids should they get in trouble online.
Vega says asking your kid a simple question like, what are you up to, can open up the conversation. And sometimes a good conversation is all your son or daughter might need. A Culver City man who spent 6 days lost in the desert shared his story today. Ed Rosenthal spoke at a news conference at Clifton's Cafeteria, where just last month he helped seal the deal to sell the place. Celebrating that sale is the reason he'd gone hiking in the first place. Rebecca Schoenenkopf has his story.
Ed Rosenthal looks frail and very tan after 6 days at the bottom of a canyon in Joshua Tree National Park. His kidneys are a wreck, and he's lost 20 pounds. But the 64-year-old real estate broker is still alive. On the morning of September 24th, Rosenthal left Black Rock Canyon for Warren View, a hike he'd taken 5 or 6 times before. He was found 6 days later, 27 miles from where he'd started.
It was a huge surprise. I lost the trail completely. I wandered through a few scary canyons, and the drops got worse.
He slept in a tiny canyon that always had shade. If he had to walk 10 steps to remain in the shade as the sun shifted, he planned it out all day to conserve his strength. And by the end, he was so weak, he could no longer sit up even when leaning against a rock.
You know, it turned out I was very friendly with this horsefly.
It slept on him, he said, and hung out all day. Then Ed Rosenthal got religion.
It was a miracle. I'm much more religious now than I was. Seriously, I prayed for rain, and it rained.
He lay back, collecting raindrops in his mouth, at a rate, he said, of up to a quarter cup an hour. Without the rain, he says, he was a goner, his insides turning to sand and his kidneys beginning to fail.
I tried to drink urine. Forget it.
At last, searchers in a helicopter spotted him.
Finally, the helicopter that I had seen for days came into the canyon. And the gentleman asked me, hey, are you that Rosenthal that's out here? I said, yeah.
It was a great day at Clifton's. A harrowing story with a happy ending. Rebecca Schoenkopf, Annenberg Radio News.
after some crazy hot, hot, hot weather, we can all enjoy the cool breeze and showers that have been rolling on in, or at least I am, turning the heater on, sipping that tea, oh yeah, liking that fall weather. And tonight, it looks like our fall weather will continue with temperatures in the 50s and some likely showers. Tomorrow, you can expect it to be around 68 degrees. And tonight, don't forget that rain jacket because there's a 60% chance of rain, or tomorrow, I mean. Thursday, we'll get a little break from those showers, seeing some sun and feeling a high near 72 degrees. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we'll hear from a journalist who spent time reporting on the border and the stories she's brought back to the U.S. from her new book. Meg Whitman's former housekeeper held yet another news conference today to answer some of the Republican gubernatorial candidate's claims that she's being manipulated. Stephanie Sherman has the story.
Nikki Diaz-Santillan denied Whitman's accusations that Brown had put her up to exposing the legal status of their work relationship. Santillan also said that she was emotionally and financially abused by Whitman. Brown earlier alleged that Whitman was employing an undocumented housekeeper between 2000 and 2009. Whitman favors toughening restrictions on illegal workers. Stephanie Sherman, Annenberg Radio News.
Community college students scramble to find classes every semester, and with less classes available, they're taking longer to graduate. President Obama wants more support for community colleges, but with California's budget in the red, our state might have a hard time answering his request. Esther Kahn reports.
President Obama said today that he wants to see community colleges produce an additional 5 million graduates nationwide by the year 2020. Today's event was the first White House summit on community colleges. He also said that community colleges play a key role in the global competition against other leading nations.
These colleges are the unsung heroes of America's education system. They may not get the credit they deserve, they may not get the same resources as other schools, but they provide a gateway to millions of Americans to good jobs and a better life.
This topic is more relevant than ever in California. And California's 112 community colleges have taken the brunt of the state's budget cuts. During the last academic year alone, the system sustained $250 million in cuts.
It's just a question of being able to offer the classes and the class sections that students need.
Juan Gutierrez is the director of public relations at Pasadena City College.
We're way over cap right now, and that seems to be what's happening up and down California specifically.
Gene Hong, a second-year student at Santa Monica College, says his plan to transfer to a UC by next year may be in jeopardy.
For this year especially, I crashed 7 different courses, and I wasn't able to get into anything, including Friday classes and Saturday classes.
Recently, community colleges in California have been seeing a surge in students now that UCs and CSUs are admitting fewer applicants. Esther King, Annenberg Radio News.
The government announced today it is suing American Apparel. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission says the clothing company fired one of its workers after he went on medical leave for chemotherapy treatment. The worker says American Apparel approved his leave, but he says when he came back to work, the company fired him. If that did happen, then American Apparel, which employs 10,000 people globally, violated federal law. American Apparel has not yet commented on the lawsuit. There's been an ongoing debate about how to secure our borders. But what do we know about the people who live on the border? Producer Stephanie Guzman sat down with journalist and author Tyke Hendricks, who has covered the borderlands extensively. Now she's releasing her first book called The Wind Doesn't Need a Passport.
Your title focuses on wind, and the cover kind of shows this desert, barren land with this type of like wind tunnel and someone pointing at it. So what does that cover mean to you, and what does wind mean to you in relation to this topic?
Sure. I'm up in a little propeller plane with a rancher down in the boot heel of New Mexico, and he's pointing out the window. It's this sort of high desert grassland, and it stretches across from New Mexico into Chihuahua. And he's pointing, and there's a little line, which is just this little barbed wire fence, which is both the border fence and also his pasture fence. And I chose that photo for the cover because Usually when we look at a photograph of the border, we're looking at a photograph of this big steel wall. But in this case, my book is really looking at the ways that we're connected at the border, the way that this is a region rather than a dividing line. And I felt that this photograph really illustrated that.
I'm from Southern California. My boyfriend's from Texas. Our family's from Tucson, Arizona. So, like, we all live kind of on those border states, but yet we have no concept of what the border looks like or the people that live there. Is that what most Americans experience?
Yeah, and I think the further that you get from the border, the sort of the harder it is to really grasp it. And I think in reality, the more time that I spent there reporting, the boundary is like this sort of seam that stitches the two countries together. And there are a million crossings of that border every day. Well, let me tell you the story of William Hurt, who was that rancher down in the Boot Heel of New Mexico. Because his family, an Anglo family, his grandparents had homesteaded the land 100 years earlier. And they are just one of many, many examples of people who have lives that are linked across the border. So they're very rooted there. And he fell in love with the cousin of one of those ranch hands. And they courted back and forth. And then they decided to get married, but they were very concerned to follow immigration law to the letter. And so they actually had their wedding at the little Antelope Wells port of entry. And she stood on the Mexican side and he stood on the U.S. side and they said their I do's. And then she stepped across into the United States.
And when you visit, what do you see it being in 10 years? Or what do you hope that it would look like?
Right. Well, I think it's very true that decisions that we make now are going to shape the next, you know, generation and so forth moving forward. We need to think in more creative ways, strategic ways about how we deal with issues like immigration and drug trafficking and collaborate better at the border and you know, really in our binational relationship with Mexico, because Mexico's not going away.
Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That was Tyke Hendricks, author of The Wind Doesn't Need a Passport. She's also a lecturer at UC Berkeley and works in public radio at KQED. You may be seeing more pink around lately. That's because October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and pink is its signature color. This month, we are reminded of the breast cancer's hard reality. 1 in 8 women will develop breast cancer in their lifetime, and after lung cancer, breast cancer is still the second leading cause of cancer death in women. There are things you can do to support breast cancer research. Simply buy products that donate to the breast cancer research, and donate some of the proceeds to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. Now we check in with Tina Faley to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Tina. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Madeline. Some students may have been shocked to see fire coming out of parking structure X early this afternoon, just across the street from the New North dorms. Firefighters were on scene within minutes. And there's also a new rating system for safety equipment in cars. The bar has been raised, and it's now harder to get the highest ratings. Plus, we have the story on the hiker who was stranded in the desert for 6 days. To find out more about these stories and others, tune in to Annenberg TV News at 6 on Trojan Vision.
And that's it for this Tuesday. We had help from Ryan Nunez. Stephanie Guzman is our producer. Jessica Flores is the executive producer. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Madeline Cinto. And make sure to check out our website, www.annenbergradio.org. Thanks for listening, guys, and see you on Thursday. Bye-bye. Thank you.